United States v. Wahi.
Morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Mark Titici, and I represent the appellant, Dr. Rakesh Wahi. As Your Honors know, there are two issues in the appeal, one on subject matter jurisdiction of the District Court and one on the merits of the expungement petition. I'll turn to the jurisdiction first. The basic question in any jurisdictional appeal is whether the court has the power to do what's being asked of it. If it does, there's jurisdiction and the case can proceed to the merits. Here, however, the government advocates commingling that jurisdictional inquiry with the merits by asking that whether a court has expungement jurisdiction turn on not whether the court has the power to manage and expunge its records. It clearly does, and the government agrees that a court does have that management authority, but whether the individual petitioner has brought forward a sufficiently good reason for invoking that authority in his or her individual case. But that assessment of the strength of an individual petitioner's claim is a merits question, not a jurisdictional one. To be sure, the existence of particular facts will factor into that merits question, but that is separate from the jurisdictional one. The basic jurisdictional point here is that the court has the ability to manage its docket, manage its records, and expunge them where, on the merits, it deems that appropriate.
So what is the basis of that jurisdiction?
The court's inherent authority over its docket, over its records, Your Honor.
Well, inherent authority is not a jurisdictional concept. It's, it provides authority to do something once jurisdiction is established. So I think you need to address the question of what is the jurisdictional foundation for this claim for relief.
I think, Your Honor, the Supreme Government's Council puts this in the bucket of ancillary jurisdiction, and you can view it through that lens if you want to, that there was a case that was before the district court. It was a criminal case. It was the prosecution of Dr. Wahi.
Right, and there's jurisdiction under 183231 for that.
Correct.
But that case is long since over. And so, as I understand ancillary jurisdiction, you need to make an argument that this new claim for relief falls within the court's ancillary jurisdiction, and that requires an application of Kekkonen.
Yeah, Your Honor, whatever you type it, whether you call it inherent jurisdiction, ancillary jurisdiction, equitable jurisdiction, if you want to put it in any of those terms, we think it falls.
Well, there is no such thing as inherent jurisdiction. Jurisdiction has to have a constitutional basis or a statutory basis, right?
Your Honor, we can use the ancillary jurisdiction terminology, and I think if we do it in Kekkonen terms, it's Kekkonen, the second bucket that it identifies, what's necessary for the court to function effectively, to function as a tribunal.
Well, right. There's nothing about an expungement proceeding that relates to the necessity of the court to manage its judicial business. This judicial business is over.
Well, Your Honor, I think it does, and there are a couple of points in response to that. One, I think this is analogous to Rule 59 and 60 on the civil side, the civil rules, which were codifications of the court's jurisdiction to revisit a prior decision that had serious unforeseen consequences at the time a judgment was handed down. The federal rules.
Well, right, those are questions that go to the validity of the judgment. An expungement proceeding has nothing to do with the validity of the judgment, so I don't think it falls under that second. Kekkonen bucket, as you've characterized it.
Well, Your Honor, I don't think think about Rule 60B when you're talking about applying.
Right,
those are
attacks on judgments. We don't have an attack on the judgment here. You won. Your client won. Right, got the case dismissed. You're bringing a new request for a form of relief that has no basis in statute or the Constitution or the common law, or I don't know what the basis for this is.
Your Honor, I think the jurisdictional basis is the relation to the earlier suit. This case only exists because of the prior one. This is a request that case be
reopened.
I mean,
are you asking for it to be reopened? The case was dismissed in your favor.
The case was dismissed in our favor, and
so you're not asking it for it to be reopened.
We're not asking for that case to be reopened. We're asking for the records of that case to be expunged.
Right, but not because they're void or
no, but again,
some other. You're just asking because of the adverse consequences to your client that it be erased.
We're saying that documents that are on the docket in the files of that court are continuing to cause a significant injury to Dr. White. And there, I guess, are another point to offer in addition to just the basic equitable injury he's claiming is that one of the claims he has brought is that the grand jury that issued the indictment in question, one of the records in question here, was constituted in such a way that it was racially
balanced.
Too late
for that. Way too late for that. The time to raise that claim was while the case was pending. There was a problem with the racial composition of the grand jury, so you're far beyond any opportunity to bring that claim.
Procedurally, I'm not sure that that's right, Your Honor.
You can't bring that claim in the context of an expungement.
He successfully got the indictment dismissed on one ground. The fact that he didn't get it dismissed on a different ground, I don't know why that would preclude
him.
Right.
If you want to litigate a claim of a racially biased grand jury, that suit, if you will, has to have some jurisdictional foundation.
Your Honor,
I don't see it.
Sure. Consider the analogy to contempt proceedings. They don't always happen immediately.
Well, contempt is clearly within the court's authority to vindicate its decrees. This is not remotely analogous to contempt.
Your Honor, it's not about... I think I've used the case of the court's jurisdiction too narrowly, saying that unless you're vindicating...
That's what Kekkonen did. You're not meaningfully grappling with the explanation and limiting explanation that Kekkonen placed on the court's ancillary jurisdiction.
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, I don't think that Kekkonen was intended to closely cabin the court. It wasn't intended to be just expounding on the precise limits of ancillary jurisdiction.
It doesn't matter what was in the minds of the justices when they handed
down
that decision.
You're absolutely
what matters
right, Your
is
Honor.
What they said.
Absolutely.
And what they said is that there are limits to ancillary jurisdiction. Here they are.
And they say, generally speaking, they have put ancillary jurisdiction cases in one of two categories. They specifically said, generally speaking, they criticized prior decisions of that court and others for being either too loose or too rigid. They said that this is a doctrine that can't be criticized for being overly precise. It's not something that the court didn't even purport in the words of its opinion to put jurisdiction, ancillary jurisdiction, exclusively into one of two those two buckets.
Right. The court was synthesizing
yes.
the doctrine.
Yes,
but we have to pay attention to that. And so how is it that an expungement request, petition, I'm not even sure what procedural device one uses at this stage, but whatever the name of the document, what is it about that that is necessary to vindicate the court's decrees or to...
In these standard cases, Your Honor, you have someone who's appeared before a district court in the case of someone who's been charged, tried, convicted, and is appearing before them. It's someone, the Doe case we cite from the Eastern District of New York is a very recent example of this, where someone appears before the court, is convicted, sentenced, serves their sentence, serves supervised release, and the court can look back at that and say, as it's required to when it's sentencing in the first place, to say you have to impose a sentence that is sufficient but not greater than is necessary to match the crimes with which this person is charged and convicted.
Right, and those are just appeal issues. Those aren't a basis to come back in independently on a new claim for expungement.
Respectfully, no, Your Honor. That's a case where a court can look back at what has happened since it entered its sentence and say,
right,
this
but
is
we
not...
Don't, we don't have that here. What we have is a dismissal, although this would presumably apply to convictions as well. The rule that you're asking for, which is for us to maintain our prior holding, that the court has inherent authority to expunge judicial records just because... you haven't meaningfully connected it to the court's authority to enforce its decrees.
Your Honor, jurisdiction has to be decided at the more categorical level than that. I understand that this is a case about expungement of an indictment, and the court's talked about indictment, expungements of arrests and convictions, but the jurisdiction here centers on the court's ability to consider whether the records that it has entered and that is allowed to be put into its docket are either entered on an unconstitutional theory or...
You're not making a constitutional claim here that is cognizable.
Yes.
You have no statutory authority, so you have to have something else.
And it's the equitable authority of the court to remove from its docket those records that
are... But there's nothing void. There's nothing wrong with the dismissal judgment here. No mistakes were made. It's not void. There was no fraud.
Well,
it was entirely in your client's favor.
Yes, I mean, yes and no, Your Honor. You're right. The case was terminated in his favor, absolutely.
So,
but
you know, this request has nothing to do with vindicating that judgment.
Well, in a sense, it does, Your Honor, because
you're invoking the grace of the court. That is all. Asking the court to vindicate its judgment with a particular remedy.
Your Honor, Dr. Wahi was denied the opportunity to have a fair trial. The government acknowledged in its motion to dismiss the indictment that it couldn't guarantee it could give him a fair trial.
And so you won dismissal. That's your remedy.
It's a partial one, Your Honor, and Dr. Wahi's asking for the next...
No, it's a complete remedy for purposes of the criminal case.
For purposes of the criminal jeopardy he was facing, that's absolutely right, Your Honor, but he still has a taint, and he's asking the court's equitable discretion, you call it grace, Your Honor, the court's equitable discretion to afford him that further measure of relief. I see my time is up. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Teacher.
Mr. Walters.
Good morning, Your Honors. Thank you, and may it please the court and counsel. A few points I'd like to make in response to counsel's argument. On pages 9 and 10 of their brief, they said there's no need for this court to view expungement jurisdiction through the lens of ancillary jurisdiction, but that begs the question, as I believe Judge Sykes' questions pointed out, then under what lens must it be viewed? During his argument, he made the argument that there's jurisdiction, quote, because of the relation to the prior suit. That argument was rejected by Kekkonen. And then there is repeatedly the argument of equitable jurisdiction. I think the problem with the term equitable jurisdiction is the use of the term jurisdiction with it because it's so loosely used. The question of equitable jurisdiction is concerned with whether the court's remedial powers are appropriately exercised when looking at equitable considerations. That's a question completely different with subject matter jurisdiction, which is clear comes from one of three areas: the Constitution, or statute, or is it ancillary to, as pointed out by Kekkonen. The argument that Kekkonen is limited, I don't think is a good argument, because of the fact that the principles of courts are of limited jurisdiction, that there's a presumption against federal courts exercising jurisdiction, and it is on the party that is seeking that jurisdiction, it's their burden to overcome that presumption.
Let's say this expungement petition had come at the time of the dismissal and was brought while the court was retaining jurisdiction over the criminal case. Would we then move into the domain of equitable discretion?
I do not believe so, because the jurisdiction of the criminal case is founded under 3231, which is original jurisdiction over offenses against the United States. I still think that regardless of the timing of the petition, it's still going to be ancillary to what is the primary cause, and the question then is, does it fall under one of the two heads of ancillary jurisdiction? Is it necessary for the court to manage its proceedings, vindicate its authorities, or effectuate its decrees, or under the first head, which is really the what has now been codified in Section 1367 of Title 28 of pendant or supplemental jurisdiction. So I think, Your Honor, to answer your question directly again, is that regardless of the timing, a court's authority is always limited, whether a case is pending or not. And but certainly in this case, they have sought relief from the federal court. They have yet, I believe, to come up with a jurisdictional theory for the relief granted. unless there are further questions on this or on the merits, if the court were to reach that, then we would rest on our brief and our supplemental brief.
Just so I understand the procedure below, who moved for dismissal?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
Who moved for dismissal?
My understanding, I believe originally Mr. Wahi moved for dismissal. We opposed. And then when there were certain facts discovered by the government counsel regarding the agent accessing privileged emails potentially, then the government filed its own motion to dismiss on October.
So whose motion was granted?
Well, I believe the docket reads that it was the government's motion was granted.
Could the judge have denied the motion to dismiss? What happened?
I don't think so. If the government's asking for a case to be dismissed with prejudice, that the court would be able to say, no, you're going to go ahead and pursue the case, United States.
I'm just trying to get the jurisdictional moment in time when this all occurred, that's all.
And if I've misstated, I know that Mr. Wahi filed a motion raising the privilege issue. I can't remember if it was in the form of a motion to dismiss or some other form. I know that we first opposed that motion, then quickly thereafter filed our own motion to dismiss, Your Honor, on October 11, 2012. If there are no further questions, we would ask actually that the case be remanded for dismissal of the petition based on jurisdictional basis, otherwise that it would be affirmed on the merits. Thank you.
Thanks, Walters. Mr. Tatishi, you had a lot of questions, so you may have your 2 minutes of rebuttal.
Just to start with the point you ended on, Your Honor, it was a dismissal based on the government's motion, not Dr. Wahi's, although he made his motion first on essentially the same grounds.
Did you withdraw your motion to dismiss?
No, it was never withdrawn. The government...
It
just wasn't ruled on. Yes, Your Honor, that's right. Your Honor, back to Judge Sykes' questions about jurisdiction before. I just pointing out, this has come up in some of the other cases on this jurisdiction and expungement cases. The Controlled Substances Act contains a provision for expungement of youth offenders' records. But if you look at the text of the statute, there's no jurisdictional grant in the statute. So that statute obviously, I think, presumes the existence of this kind of jurisdiction. If you read the text, it's all about the standards the court should apply in deciding whether to grant it. It's about the merits of how the court's equitable discretion, the court's discretion in affording that relief should be offered.
And how procedurally does that happen?
It's a, Your Honor,
a motion that's brought while the criminal action is being resolved?
After the sentence is appropriately served, yes, Your Honor.
So the parties come back into court on expungement, or is
I believe they come back.
Does the court make a ruling on whether this is a qualifying conviction at the time of sentencing, and then later everybody comes back to court?
Everyone comes back after the sentence is served. There have been no further violations, and the conditions. The petitioner believes he's met the conditions.
Right, but the premise is that the court has retained jurisdiction in that case, right?
Yes, Your Honor, and actually that's a segue to my next point, which is that the court retained jurisdiction here as well. It was admittedly for a limited purpose, but this case is, at least as a technical matter, there is still a thread of jurisdiction connecting us to the district court because it retained all of the discovery materials that were improperly containing the Dr. Wahi's emails with his counsel and said it would retain jurisdiction over the maintenance of all of those materials for a period of 10 years from when its order
entered.
Okay,
so the court took custody of the documents?
It took custody of the documents. It retains jurisdiction over the documents. And so...
Well, so there would be, you know, an appropriate request brought to return those documents at some point because the court retained jurisdiction for that limited purpose.
It did, but if we're talking
about... But
that
doesn't encompass expungement.
No, but we're saying the distinction between us being light years out of court and having to claw our way back in and us still being before the court on some basis and bringing a different request for relief before in a case that's currently pending, that's the situation we're in right now. We ask that the merits be remanded for further consideration. Thanks, Your Honor.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chichi. Thank you, Mr. Allers. And all counsel, the case is taken under advisement and the court will stay in recess.